This is CHUO 89.1 FM. Welcome to this week's episode of The Mosaic, your weekly show highlighting the voices of the community. Here, we guide you through today's social issues, introduce you to changemakers, and keep in touch with the arts, music, and events of the city. You can expect extensive research, in-depth analysis, and discussion. From CHUO's news team, this is The Mosaic. Today, we prepare for Earth Day with an upcoming eco market. We'll talk about the various vendors and shops lined up for it and hear from the hosting organization, Reform.
Absolutely, telling our story as much as we can is super important to just having people join us.
Then we speak with Haitian sound chemist and electronic music producer Valjanti about her music, the role of Haitian voodoo, and her family's legacy of musical compositions.
Sound chemist, to me, is someone who is working with sound, but sound that is more, not like the sound that you hear from your ear, but the sound that you don't hear. Right, so like trying to tap into like that texture of what is called frequency.
Stick around, I'm Lauren Rolston, and we've got all that and more coming up on The Mosaic. Earth Day is this Monday. To celebrate, over 30 different eco-friendly and zero-waste vendors are gathering in Alta Vista for an eco-market. These local businesses are being hosted by Reform, Ottawa's only recycling design firm. They take in otherwise thrown out materials from old displays and exhibits, construction site scrap, and so on. And then they repurpose it into brand new designs. So far, the firm has saved over 18,000 pounds from Ottawa's Trail Road landfill. Reform is powered by a diverse team of designers and artists, and they're led by founder Heather Jeffrey. This week, I was able to speak with Heather about the upcoming market and the firm itself. Here's that conversation.
I want to kind of get a sense to know how long this market has been going on.
Yeah. So Eco Market has been going on for, this is the third year, but I had in the past hosted eco events at Mooney's Bay, but they weren't called Eco Markets. They're just like Earth Day at Mooney's Bay. So I've personally been doing these Earth Day related events for roughly 6 years now.
As like the organizer, or do you?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and then what can visitors expect this year?
This year they can expect so many things in terms of the vast breadth of different businesses. So there's eco landscapers, eco makers, Zero Waste Grocery Store, Ottawa Tool Library. Like, there's a lot of different types of organizations that are pursuing circular economy, recycling, upcycling, or even just environmental initiatives. So it's really diverse.
Yeah, I saw that there were like so many different vendors that are lined up this year. So people who are into like ethically, environmentally friendly, like soaps or textiles. There's just so much to look forward to. But I also kind of want to take it back because I know that you're the founder of Reform, which is, if I'm correct, the only known recycling design firm in Ottawa. Can you talk to me about like where you were when you realized that there was a need for this?
Yeah, so I realized this actually when I was working in the retail industry. This was like right out of graduating from university. I was like a merchandiser, but also a graphic designer. And at this retail store, they would just like throw out their displays all the time. Like if it was like outdated or last season, they would just throw them out. And I kind of realized that there could be an opportunity there. I love crafting. So I'm a graduate from industrial design at Carleton. So I like love hands-on types of building. So I wanted to take the old displays away. And I also am passionate about the environment. So I wanted to find a new life for these displays. And then I did. And I just kind of realized, wow, there's so much opportunity citywide. So many retailers like always throwing out displays. Also like museum exhibits, when their exhibits are retired, like they all get thrown out. Like so much material that ends up in the landfill. And I just wanted to seize the opportunity and find a way to have it not go to landfill.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And these materials are all so unique. So like museum displays and retail exhibits. Can you kind of like walk us through the journey of when you get these materials? Like what happens to them?
Yeah. So let's say, for example, a construction company is like, oh, we're renovating a home here in Ottawa. They'll call us up and they'll say, okay, so we're taking out hardwood flooring out of this home. Will you come pick it up? So we do offer pickup services. So when people are reaching out to us and say, we don't have the availability of a vehicle to bring it to you, so we will go pick it up and then we bring back the materials. So in this scenario, we would bring back the flooring and then kind of have it in our storage facility until a project comes up, which typically is like anywhere between like one, even just like a couple of days to like a couple of months. A project will come up and then we'll incorporate that material in the project. So we would end up stripping the finishes, stripping any kind of coatings on that material and then incorporate it into new items, which is typically exhibitions, trade show booths, signage, furniture, a lot of different types of things for other businesses.
Gotcha. I imagine you work with some pretty unique materials in that sense. Do you have off the top of your head, like some of the most shocking or surprising or unique materials that you've worked with?
That is a great question. Yes, actually, it's funny because literally like 20 minutes ago, I was in our material room kind of like sifting through things because we are having like a garage sale style thing at the eco market where we're getting rid of these really cool materials. And some of them are like old displays from another retail company, but they have like really cool metallic finishes or they're shaped like diamonds or like you can imagine just picture walking through a shopping mall and seeing like very interesting window displays in stores. Mm-hmm. So we get a lot of those like funky things. So like we have like really cool shaped items or shiny. I do like shiny things. So I tend to be like, oh wow, look at that cool like diamond shape whatever thing. So yeah, we have interesting, it's hard to explain exactly what it is, but they're like typically metal based, plastic or wood based materials that we get.
Okay, so lots of like artistic, almost sculpture-esque kind of displays.
Yeah, we get those. We also get a lot of like museum exhibit stuff. Once I remember we got like tons of sheets of recycled plastic that actually was recycled from like plastics in the ocean. Oh, wow. So like we get a lot of really cool stuff like that that has great story behind it. And also people will donate like old furniture. Like we got our old radio from like the 1940s once from someone. So we get a lot of really interesting things for sure.
That is so cool. Okay. I kind of wanted to pull on if there was a mission statement or a goal that you're trying to achieve with this firm and the work that you guys do with these upcycled designs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say our mission is to essentially shift the mindset of local businesses and industries who traditionally see scrap or offcuts as waste. So we're trying to shift that mindset in a sense where we encourage these organizations to think of alternative solutions rather than having it go in the landfill and kind of like create a collaborative sense of fabrication where like I really love working with businesses where they are throwing out something, but they also need something. So I'm like, hey, what if we use your scraps or your offcuts and transform it into this such and such thing that you need. So finding solutions, but in a like collaborative sense is also like one of our missions.
It sounds like a satisfying exchange. I know that in today's landscape, we're learning so much more about the effects of climate change and consumerism and overconsumption. A lot of people are changing their spending habits. Is this something that you relate with and how do you grapple with that?
Yeah, spending habits. It's interesting because I find certain target markets have different approaches in terms of like where they spend their resources. So we typically cater to other businesses and businesses especially are looking to change the way they approach environmental initiatives. Definitely residential clients as well are looking to kind of like do better in terms of their consumption. But I find especially small, medium-sized enterprises are really tackling like, okay, we can do better. Let's reduce our emissions. And to be honest, because of the fact that like this is starting to grow and evolve, like the passion and the desire to do better in terms of environmental sense, the amount of resources they're willing to contribute is actually expanding. So I'm actually finding it's quite a great space to be in. People are hopeful, people are feeling good about it. And honestly, in a sense of residential spending as well, we have seen like an uptake in like, there's been a lot more donations lately. People really are trying to change their waste generation levels, but there are definitely some people who are recognizing great quality made product, which we provide, is actually sustainable in the long run. Like buying something that's really well handcrafted, well made, is going to last you like a lifetime compared to like something from, you know, big box store that's blue and yellow that is typically made out of like chipboard or something like that. You know, it's not going to last as long. So yeah.
Right. Okay. And so you guys are making these long lasting and unique pieces. Do you have any favorites? I know we just talked about the materials that you like to use, but as far as the pieces that you've put out there.
Personally, for me, I really love the unique types of projects that we build. So we build projects that are really classic, well-made, beautiful, gorgeous furniture. In fact, we're working on a solid maple line right now for furniture rental company Lululounge. But aside from like the beautiful modern furniture, I actually love like the stuff that's really hard to do. Like someone comes in and they're like, oh, we need a 7 foot tall Easter egg, or we need a fake building front that looks like Santa's village. Like I really love that stuff. It's definitely a lot harder to do, but just like, I don't know, I love that side, like theater sets, conference display booths, like trade show booths. I love all that kind of fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. And how long does a typical project take you? I know it varies, but
yeah, definitely. So like we have some projects that are kind of like signage projects. They last anywhere between like 2 days to 4 days, but then we also have projects where we're creating like this furniture line. It's actually going to take like a couple months, so it depends honestly on the project for sure.
And I'm just curious, do you know what you're gonna do, or have you done something with that old radio? Like what did you end up doing with that?
Yeah, so actually it's funny because we got an old radio twice. It was a different style, different size radio, but the first radio was turned into a wine rack. And then the second radio, it's funny because it was turned into basically a radio. But the old radio function didn't work. So we put in like a Bluetooth speaker radio product. So
keeping it modern.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to pull it back to like a more personal level, because talking about climate change and like this mission is so needed, but like the burnout is real for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So what inspires you to keep going?
Oh, yeah, that's actually something I definitely, like I'm sure many entrepreneurs in the city deal with. Basically, what keeps me going is actually the community. And I'm especially thinking about a couple of people I work with. There's a lot of really supportive clients, really supportive fans of like what we're doing. And sometimes they'll just reach out over social media or even just by phone, and they'll just say like, you know, what you're doing is really amazing. And then of course, like opportunities where we get to talk about what we do and we're being noticed in the community, like those types of opportunities where like people want to hear the story, like that is exactly something that keeps me going too.
Mm-hmm. And it's also like kind of a strong network.
Yeah.
Your team is also like a lot of graduates with varying skills that they bring to the table. So can you tell me a little bit more about the team too?
The team is so creative. Basically, they come from a lot of different backgrounds. In general, it's like furniture design and furniture making. But there's so many other like underlying skills. Like there's creative art program, there's like craft, just like so much music, art, like so many different creative things like playing in to their skill levels. And yeah, I find, I don't know. I don't even know how to answer that because they have so many things that they can do. I'm just like thinking of so many things that they're talented at, but yeah, it's a really cool team.
I mean, definitely important to have creativity because you guys work with so many different projects and materials and ideas. You've also, like, the team has spoken at, like, environmental panels and expos too. So you're not limited to working on projects. You're going out and you're spreading this kind of awareness. Can you tell me why that's, like, important to you guys?
Yeah, to spread the awareness is, like, ultimately the thing that's driving like the growth of Reform. So we spend a lot of like, we being like mostly me, I go to these events as much as I can because I'm finding that when I tell the story and when I connect with other organizations to kind of really explain like our process, you can almost see this light bulb go off and like, oh yeah, like we have this stuff that you can use. And honestly, it's so tricky sometimes to explain what I do without being in person, because in person I can bring like a portfolio, and even going to these types of conferences or chatting with other organizations like on a public level, it really goes to show like that we mean business, like we're here because we want to make a difference. And just I think the passion is really obvious when I'm like talking about it and they're like, okay, we want to work with this person. So yeah, absolutely, telling our story as much as we can is super important to just having people join us.
Gotcha. And I'm like running to the end of my questions here, but for Saturday, April 20th, this eco market coming up, is there anything else that you would like people to know about it or about Reform?
Yeah, so in a sense of the eco market, there's so many activities going on. So we're collecting materials that are not being used anymore or considered scrap. So Reform is collecting like household lumber or construction materials that you're not using. And then we're also collecting hazardous waste that the city of Ottawa is collecting, because we're collecting it so that we can bring it to the hazardous waste depot the day after. There's also bicycle maintenance workshops going on. There's like kids scavenger hunt activities in terms of coloring. There's even some really cool like free bins where people can come by and pick some stuff up in a circular economy sense, where like they'll take it, use it, and then like, I don't know, maybe recycle it again one day kind of thing. So yeah, there's lots of different initiatives going on. Absolutely encourage people to go on to the Facebook event page or the Eventbrite page, and that will have information about the event and all the things that are going on. For Reform, honestly, we just are so excited to see the community come together and come to this event and just like be excited about environmental initiatives. We aren't necessarily having like a huge setup, but like I said, we are liquidating like some of the materials that have been around for a while, and they're really cool materials, so don't miss it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for taking the time with me today.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was really great.
That was my conversation with Reform's founder, Heather Jeffrey. For more information on Reform's Eco Market this weekend, head to their Eventbrite page. There are four times in the year that the Ottawa art scene erupts in an eclectic music festival known as Peak. The artist-driven event showcases a variety of international multimedia performers. The spring edition filled the Ottawa Art Gallery with musicians, performers, and fans. Haitian electronic music composer Valjanti performed Afro Electronica, or Voodoo Electro, for a captivated audience. The turntablist layered different sounds, beats, and clips together. And after seeing this performance for myself, I wanted to get a better understanding of Jonti's inspiration. This week we reached Jonti over Zoom to talk about her music, the cultural inspirations of Haitian voodoo, and her family's own musical legacy. Here's our conversation.
I watched you perform at Peak, and I thought it was a mind-blowing experience.
I'm pretty new in the world of electronic music, but your performance was super unique. It was something like I hadn't heard of ever before. And so you are an electronic music producer, a turntablist, a sound chemist, and I want to talk a little bit more about that definition in a second. But there were two words that came up to describe the sound that you're putting out there. And I want to know how you describe abstract turntablism and Afrofuturism.
Ah, cool. Yeah, those are great questions. And thank you for being present. Because it's one thing to like listen to a track, let's say via SoundCloud and being like present to actually see, you know, how it's done somewhat. But how I define my music, you know, like I always try to make it kind of like basic words. So of course, you know, I'm from IT. So, you know, I'm bringing that African culture into the digital world, right? So it's like, I'm trying to get to that perfect balance of like, what's real and what's not real. And what I mean by that is like, what is, you know, organic as far as like culture, you know, ancient cultures, like the Vodou culture, and, you know, what I'm using now, which, you know, are like toys like this, mm-hmm. which are totally not real, but they're tools that I can use to sort of, you know, express myself and be able to connect to the present world, you know, that I'm living in now. So yeah, that's why I try to use like simple words like Afro Electronica or, you know, Vodou Electro, which is a bit more descriptive. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's always been just like, you know, music connecting to my culture. But since you know, I have to like define it, then, you know, of course, you know, then I have to put, you know, kind of words. But like, I always try to go back to like, okay, it's just a language that, you know, allows us to connect.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
It's like capturing a feeling mm-hmm. and a moment. I think that electronic music gives you a whole lot of opportunities to be able to do that in a unique way as well, because you get to play with so many different mediums. I remember hearing like there were lines of dialogue and audio clips in your performance, too. And you can create these like complex mm-hmm. rhythms and textures to make more of like a transcendent vibe. So getting back to that sound chemist role, what are some of the main messages or themes that you're trying to get to in these pieces?
Ah, that's a good question. And actually someone asked me that question when I went to do this workshop. This was in Michigan State, and it was a good question because we had students there. So they were like, what is a sound chemist? And I was like, oh, really good question. So, you know, I'll start there. Sound chemist to me is someone who is working with sound, but sound that is more not like the sound that you hear from your ear, but the sound that you don't hear, right? So like trying to tap into like that texture of what is called frequency, you know, or hertz. Right. So it's not just like, okay, I'm going to play a beat, boom, 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 boom. No, it's about like dissecting it and kind of like picking each sound and like knowing what that sound is. Oh, okay, that's a snare, but why is it like this? And then, you know, having the tools like, let me see my MPC X, you know, right here, I can take that one snare and put it in there, like stretch it out. I mean, I could do so much, you know, and it could be hours and like hours with just one sound. But the whole idea, you know, of sound chemists is to transmute mostly pain, you know, mostly like that tension that's like, you know, inside of us into something that I can use as like, wow, actually, I love this. This is kind of like healing. You know, so it goes from like a pain to like healing sort of your vibe. So that's the whole thing. So like I'll take one example of that is I'll take some of those words, you know, that you heard in the background. They're not just there, you know, to be random. They're there to kind of ground me back to the space like, oh, okay, this is IT. Okay, now I'm back here. Now I can tap into a certain type of like space where there's a specific sound that exists there. And then I can bring that sound in and sort of like add it to the sonic healing potion. You know, because I'm like creating it right there, you know, on the spot. So I'm like, okay, let me pick this one. And then, oh, okay, this one. And it's all about instinct. You know, it's about instinct. And it's also about being connected to that culture, because Vodou culture is, you know, about that. It's about taking your pain and connecting it back to nature, and then asking nature to help you, to the cosmos, to the, you know, gods. And so it's all like that kind of connection. Yeah. So from Sound Chemist, I think, because I'm in that space that's like creating like on the spot. So I usually try to step outside of myself and let whatever the message is coming through to just come through. So sometimes I don't even know what specific message prior to the set, but I just try to keep my mind kind of clear of, you know, whatever texting or bills or, you know, whatever else is going on in this world, in this, you know, mundane world. And then I try to create that space where it's just peace. And I'm like, okay, I'm ready. You know, whatever message, you know, you have to tell me, let's go. Now this is, you know, the time. And then I just like to channel, you know, whatever. And then after the words, I'm like, oh, okay, that's what they were trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of like beyond me, you know, I'm just like the vessel.
My ancestors have not thought about it.
You know, and then I try like my hardest to not think about what it's going to be. Because then I feel like, wait a minute, I thought about that. So it's not really like improv.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you're in that space, it's so much fun, because then you don't have to worry about, am I doing it right or is it wrong? Because you're not the one that's in control.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very, very cultural. We're not in control. You know, we sometimes have to surrender, especially when it comes to art. You have to surrender to it and let it flow how it wants to flow. Because if I start to think about, oh, it should go this way, that could be swayed by, let's say, my mood, you know, let's just say like breakfast sucked. Then, you know, when I go to do my set, I'm like thinking about, oh man, breakfast sucked, and it doesn't flow the same way. So like, I have to just, you know, step aside and just say, okay, now I surrender, you know, and I trust, this is my culture. Okay, let's go.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, yeah, it's not like a pre-thought thing. It just kind of, you know, happens as a practice too.
Of course. It sounds really spiritual. Like when you're just kind of like letting this frequency kind of take over. It also sort of sounds a little bit like, you mentioned it was a skill. It also kind of sounds like a language that you learn. When did you realize that you could kind of like feel and speak and produce music like this?
Well, it's still a process, I'll be honest. But Vodou culture, you know, kind of gives me a lot of that backbone, because all of the rhythmic patterns, they all have specific timing, you know, specific tribes that they connect to. So, you know, I have a guideline from the culture. You know, I'm lucky enough to have that. And then sometimes it'll just cross in between, let's say, tribes. So let's say, you know, there's like the Nago tribe, there's like the Petwo. So Petwo is like fast, you know, you can think of like Petwo as like techno, you know, so it's I think one of the pieces I played there was like that. So it's very danceable. It's very, you know, but for me, that's sort of like the chant to kind of like war, you know, it's like, okay, we're warriors and we're ready to fight. You know, that's part of the culture. And in Nago is more like, you know, it's right there. It's more slower. So like sometimes, you know, it just kind of will cross and I'm like, okay, what's happening? Okay, well, hey, let it happen. You know, so yeah, I have sort of like a guideline based off of the culture, you know, the Vodou culture. You know, there's also specific chants. I think one of them I played there for Papa Loco, which is the wind god. And funny enough, every time when I'm flying, because that's not my favorite thing to do. So when I get on a flight and there's like turbulence, you know, that starts, I'm always like, oh, Papa Loco, I start to sing it, and somehow it kind of, you know, calms things down. I don't know if it's just in my mind, you know, I don't know. But yeah, we have, you know, specific patterns, specific songs, specific tribes, you know, that they go with. It's kind of like amazing to have that. You know, I feel blessed to have that, because at any moment I can just tap into the boom, you know, I can go to the Petwo, you know, to the Nago. And sometimes too, there's some tribes I'm like, I don't know what that is, but I like it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just go, you know, with it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this like Vodou culture, was it like a big part of your childhood? I kind of remember reading that your grandma was a Vodou priestess. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Vodou is, well, you know, also part of Haitian culture,
mm-hmm.
just as is. So that's my culture. Yeah, I was blessed enough to have that.
Yeah.
And it's just part of life.
Yeah. I also got this quote here. I guess there was a saying about Haiti is 70% Catholic, 30% Protestant, and 100% Voodoo. And you bring these themes into your music and your performances, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I try to bring that in because I think it's so funny too, you know, like the voodoo dolls and all that stuff. So yeah, I think it's fun to just like bring sort of like a light, but then kind of like fun, you know, make it fun so that it's not so tense, because it could be so tense for some people. Oh, voodoo. I like to bring it in a sort of like love, like a loving way.
It's like storytelling and history too. And speaking of history, this like musical talent of yours, it sounds like it's carried through your family a little bit, because I was reading you're related to Oxide Djinti.
Yeah, yes, that's my great uncle.
Wow.
Yeah. And funny enough, like I didn't, my whole life growing up, I never really cared. It's like, okay, you know, whatever. Because he played classical back in 2016. Talking to my mom, you know, over the phone, and then she was, you know, complaining, you know, hey, you know, your daddy didn't call me back, blah, blah, blah. So then I was like, Mom, how did you get involved with those guys? You know, I was kind of like messing with her. And she said, well, actually, those guys have a lot of talent because you're a uncle, da, da, da. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know. And then after we talked, you know, something was like, let me just go online and see if he's up there. So when I typed up his name, the first thing that popped up was Afro Classical. It just like, boom, my whole life I've been doing this work, you know, and I was just like, oh, okay, I just want to call it this way. It was the first time that it was confirmation that what I was doing was part of something bigger than me. I was like, wait a minute, he had the same idea, you know, to bring in the culture within, you know, the art form and to share it, you know, to the world, to show, okay, this is what, you know, we have, and this is how, you know, we see it. And these are all like the different patterns that, you know, we can bring into the art form to kind of share the goodness. And then I was like, wow, he was doing, you know, the same thing. So in a way, you know, I'm kind of living this life. So Afrofuturism is not just a style to me. This is part of life. I'm like continuing a work, mm-hmm. you know, that's been laid down, you know, for me, even before him.
Yeah. You know? So, it's like a legacy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I guess a lot of the themes in his music for these classical compositions were like Haitian resistance and political autonomy. I'm wondering if those are some themes that you can relate with as well.
Of course. I mean, yeah, definitely. I just have like a different approach, you know, about it. Because like, I feel like through the art, all that comes through. That's my, you know, family. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like Haitian folks, you know, we know what it is because we were the first ones to say no. You know, we're like, actually, no, we don't want to keep following this. We want to be free. So, yeah.
This is kind of like a big question, but like hypothetically, if you could go back and say something to your great grand uncle, what would you say? The fact that you're carrying on this legacy and like you're carrying these themes forward.
Yeah, I would just tell him, thank you. Like, thank you for doing this, because he took a risk. He took a lot of risk. There's one of his songs, actually, Poulet, Coq, the rooster, the hen, and then the chicks. And part of that piece, if you listen into it, you could hear how he was kind of thinking of it as like a sampler. So there's one part where you could hear, you know, like the chicken jump, and then there's like the little chick. And I was like, wow, he was already thinking in that way of like sampling sounds and putting it in certain places. And that's how, you know, my mind works. So I'm like, oh, I get it now. I'm not just like a cuckoo, you know, musician. Like everything makes sense. It's all starting to make sense slowly but surely. So yeah, I would just say to him, thank you for having all this guts. And yeah, thank you. And then a big hug.
It's truly like cultural, spiritual, and I keep coming back to this word transcendent. Like it really is tapping into this feeling. Mm. I also know that now you are working at the Berklee College of Music. What are some of the things that you're hoping to teach young and aspiring students?
Yeah. I'm actually part of some great programs. One of them is EPD, which is the electronic production and design. And I mean, we're having so much fun in that. So for that program, I teach electronic improv. I teach also dub tempo class. I also teach rhythm class, like with the pads. So if folks have like push threes and stuff like that. And then I also work part of this jazz and gender justice program. And for them, you know, I do also like a Afro electronica class. So I teach them about how sound has also color and shape. And, you know, the concept of, you know, those kind of concepts. And they're like, wow. I'm like, yeah, of course it does. And I show them the color sound wheel chart. And yeah, we have a lot of fun. Yeah. And then I feel like, you know, Berkeley is one of those places where, like, I mean, they're shaping the world, you know, with these guys. And there's so many amazing folks there, human beings, just amazing. It's an amazing place to visit. Or to just come and study, or you know, whatever. It's a great place. I'm sure there's, you know, there's some downside to it too. But my time there so far has been just incredible, just great.
Wow, that's amazing. And when you're teaching like improv, I know you said yourself it's still an ongoing journey, and like you've kind of really embraced this surrendering to the feeling and just like absolutely letting the feeling flow through you. But that concept also seems like it could be daunting to people who are new. I'm wondering if you ever had a hard time grasping improv, or if there are any fears that you really had to overcome.
Wow. You know, it's most of my time is spent, you know, in my space, because I'm a hermit. So a lot of time is spent, you know, with my gear. Like, these are my best friends. Like, these are my best friends here.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, once you spend that much time and you're so, like, attached to your gear, I think, you know, a lot of that stuff, it goes out the window. But I think it's still, like, a process. In the practicing part of your time, you know, I think that's when you kind of work, you know, that stuff out. But sometimes I think, you know, when things are not working out right, then, you know, I might freak out. But then I'm like, okay, just, you know, relax. But when it comes time to work, I'm just there, you know, I'm just totally like, because that, I mean, that's my life, you know, I don't really have any other life outside of that. It's all about like gear and sound, you know, I'm all in it. So there's always, you know, something to do here, you know, to just keep me busy. And I think that kind of builds up a certain type of connection with the sound. And I also work with like tons of other folks too, you know, dancers, folks that are just amazing. To kind of get like an outside perspective as well. Yeah. And I'm just so comfortable with sound.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know.
So like, you know? practice. And this equipment kind of becomes like another piece of you, and you can just trust yourself.
Yes. And they also become like my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely, you know, become my friends. And then sometimes when I practice too much on this one, that one gets you upset.
Yeah.
So I have to break up the time between.
Yeah. There's like relationships going on.
If you have lots of gear, I'm sure, you know, you can relate to this, but my time is more like, you know, like loner. So like, this is the kind of world that I've been in since my teenage years. Like I was always, you know, ready to be in my space and just creating, you know, my own galaxy kind of thing, you know? And then once I'm there, nothing else matters. Sometimes, you know, I have to stop and like, wait a minute, am I hungry? Like I hear my stomach, okay, I have to stop and eat. Can you get out of this galaxy and go back to Earth?
Okay, that's dedication.
Get some water, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the times I'm in there. And I kind of think it helps me to just balance the stress of this world too, because I have somewhere else to go and then I can come back and forth.
It sounds like that's the end goal for you at the end of the day, or a big part of it, to spread that feeling for your listeners as well.
Ah, I never I thought about it that way, but yeah, definitely to share, you know, the culture, just all the beautiful colors, you know, that we bring to the art form. For sure.
Yeah, colors, shapes, all these interesting textures that I wouldn't have thought of if I hadn't heard like more about electronic music. So thank you for that. I'm running to the end of my questions here, but I've learned a bunch about like how voodoo culture has inspired your music, a lot about the music in your bloodline too.
Thank you so much, you know, for your time, and thank you for being there to like absorb, you know, some of that, because it's one thing to like speak to someone, you know, who just hears it from, you know, let's say a link, and then someone who's actually like there in the space. So yeah, thank you for being in that space.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing that to Ottawa too. I hope you can do it again sometime.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'm down. Yeah. Yeah, that place was nice, too. Yeah, so I'm down.
That was my conversation with Valjanti, with clips from her performance of Remède, available on YouTube. You can also find her music on SoundCloud and Instagram. And that's it for this week's episode of The Mosaic. Thanks so much for tuning in. Music for The Mosaic is by Helizna. To listen to this episode and previous ones, go to chuo.fm/podcasts. If you're interested in joining our news team, email news@chuo.fm. We'll see you next week, Thursday at 1 p.m.